Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in to Commanding the Huddle. I am your host, Ryan Fowler. You guys read the title of this episode. We are getting into my final predictive 2024 7-round mock for the Burgundy Gold, the Washington Commanders, GM Adam Peters, head coach Dan Quinn, Cliff Kingsbury, DC Joe Witt. We're going to get into everything today. Now, I recently just posted this mock on Twitter as well, if you want to take a look at it from a visual perspective. But this was fun to do. And I think mock simulators are fun. A lot of mocks out there, those simulators, they don't do a good job of really understanding where the league has these guys or where certain guys are going to be in certain rounds. So when I go on these mock simulators and I just plug in for you guys to just post my thoughts and do things like this for you, I really take into account everything as far as where I'm looking at positional value in which round and which guys are ultimately probably going to be there. And I don't want to be taking a guy in the fifth round that I know is going to be gone in the third round, or take a guy in the sixth round that probably will go undrafted, or take a guy in the first round that a lot of teams have third round grades on or late second round grades on. So a lot of it comes with context. But again, today, this is not going to be my mock draft that I would do for the Washington Commanders. A little bit is players that I do like, and if they came out of this draft with this haul that I'm about to get into, I would be happy with it. But predictively, what I'm hearing out of Washington, and from other teams as well, that have some eyes into what Washington is doing, at the top. Now, I will say this, as we sit here, a little above 48 hours, until we get to Detroit, I will be on my flight to Detroit here in the next 12 hours. I'll be out of there. I'll be in Detroit for the draft in all 3 days. However, nobody in the industry knows exactly what the Commanders and GM Adam Peters are going to do at number 2 overall. Is it Drake May from North Carolina? Is it Jaden Daniels from LSU? I will say now, if I was making the pick, I would take Drake May from North Carolina. I've told you guys on social media, I've said it on prior podcasts, and reasons why I would make that pick. However, predictively, and the buzz that's been coming out from the resources, other guys around the industry that are also plugged in, I do think that it is going to be Jaden Daniels to kick off Adam Peters' draft hauls and future draft hauls in Washington. Quarterback from LSU, the Heisman winner. Now, we've gone this route before, 12 years ago, taking a Heisman winner, extremely athletic, fast, linear speed, and Robert Griffin III. Let's hope that Jaden Daniels could last a year. At least, or more, right? Let's just get more than a year out of the guy, like we got with RG3. 2012 was fun. I know you guys remember that year. But we got to get a more out of Jaden Daniels. You can take him number 2 overall. And with that comes a lot, right? Gonna have to succeed at the NFL, more than just vertical shots down the field and linear speed. But if Washington eyes a guy that wants to expand the playbook with his legs, with his arm, then if Jaden Daniels is your guy, Adam Peters, and the staff, then go get your guy. However, where this draft really kicks off for me is in the later portions of the first round and when we get to the second round. Because overall, beyond the second overall pick, what is Washington going to do? Now, I think one of the worst kept secrets in this draft is that Washington is going to be aggressive and looking to trade back into the first round that they did years ago when they drafted Montez Sweat after, of course, drafting Dwayne Haskins to get a tackle. That, for sure, is for me one of the worst kept secrets in this draft. Because Washington, again, has 6 total picks, including the 100th overall selection, in the top 100 in this draft. So they have a ton of draft capital and ammo to move up, to move down, to really get players that they want as far as high-impact guys. And if they're sitting there, and a guy like Tyler Guyton from Oklahoma, one of my favorite players in the class, by the way, is there in the mid-20s, high-20s, and they want to make a move with a potentially a Baltimore, or have to jump them, and they want to make a move with a Tampa Bay or a Buffalo at 28, we will see. But again, I expect Washington to be aggressive, so I do have them trading back into the first round to the 29th overall selection and grabbing Tyler Guyton, offensive tackle from Oklahoma, again, after drafting Jaden Daniels with the number 2 overall pick. So now you add a quarterback, you add your guy. Now you add a bookend tackle to where most likely you'll slide him in right away at left tackle or right tackle. It does not matter for me. Andrew Wiley's on the roster, but Tyler Guyton's lived at right tackle for Oklahoma, so he could play there right away. Or you slide him into the left side, and you have him live there for the foreseeable future. Now, got some coaching and development that needs in his game, technicality portions of his game, and especially in the run game with his hands, things have to work. But overall, the athleticism, the size at 6'8", 320, big dude. All the bit of 6'8". Seeing him live at the Senior Bowl, humans should not move the way he does at 6'8", over 315 pounds. So, again, he could be your immediate round one, or excuse me, day one tackle on the right side, or he could be your day one guy on the left side. And that versatility is sensational. And again, expect Washington to be aggressive, trying to move back into the first round to grab an offensive tackle. So let's move in to day two. Again, first round picks, number 2 overall, Jaden Daniels, quarterback from LSU, and offensive tackle Tyler Guyton, the 29th overall pick, Washington trading back in to grab him, again, tackle from Oklahoma. So now this is where Adam Peters, the scouting staff, you begin to shine. What players do you have higher than other teams, right? Everyone can sit there and say, these are my top 30 guys, my top 40 guys. Well, what happens when you work into rounds 2, 3, 4, 5, 6? Can you find guys that aren't just going to be flyers at the position, but what Adam Peters has done in his past is grab guys in the middle to later rounds to not just wear a jersey, but to come in and be productive. And whether that's just on offense or just on defense, but also be able to cut your teeth on special teams and a willingness to do so. So as I move into day two here, my focus on day two, after adding a quarterback and adding a tackle, two major needs, of course, for this Washington Commanders football team, is corner. They got to get more corners. Now, the team added a guy like Michael Davis, right, in the offseason, a veteran, looks a lot like Benjamin St. Juste. He's going to play this year. And right now, you could say the top three corners on Washington's roster are Michael Davis, Benjamin St. Juste, and Emmanuel Forbes. And we will see as far as what the exact role is going to be for a guy like Quan Martin that can play nickel, he can play some outside, he can play that robber role, or he could drop back and play some safety for you and offer some unique looks, and he can flat out get after the passer because he is a physical football player. But I'm not going to sit here right now and limit Quan Martin to just say he's going to live at nickel 100% of the time like we saw in years past from a guy like Kendall Fuller as a pure cover corner. That's not what Quan Martin is. I love the versatility in this game. I love the athleticism. We saw it in spurts last year. I think about the New England game, making plays in the football towards the back end of the year. So with me, if Washington's able to keep that 40th overall selection after making the trade for Tyler Guyton, I love Ennis Rakestraw from Missouri. The reason why I say that is I do expect Washington to play a combination of zone and a combination of man this year. It's not just zone or it's not just man. Now, I know you guys out there are scared when you hear man and you think of Emmanuel Forbes and what happened in year one. I'm excited, first things first, for Emmanuel Forbes working into year two under Dan Quinn and Joe Witt Jr. I am excited. What they've done with Trayvon Diggs, who's not the best cover corner in the world, neither is Deron Bland, but their ability to allow those guys to be themselves, make plays in the football, work downhill, be an athlete, don't be a robot, just play football like you've done all your entire life. And from Emmanuel's perspective, was the premier ball hawk in the 2023 class. And if there's any guys that understand how to coach up ball hawks, it's Dan Quinn and it's Joe Witt. So that side of things for Emmanuel, he's going to play a lot this year, as he should, first round pick. But you add a guy like Ennis Rakestraw on the perimeter. If you guys haven't seen his tape, he's battled some injuries in this pre-draft process, but I expect him to be fully healthy, ready to go for training camp. And of course, week one in September, whoever Washington plays, home or away. Now, we'll get the schedule out here in early May in these next few weeks. But you add Ennis Rakestraw, turn on the Georgia game. First play. He is in the face of receivers on the outside, inside the contact window, being physical. He's got the footwork to slide and maneuver and play man. He's got the ability to make plays on the football down the field. He'll stick his face in the mud in the run game. Now, he does not have that atypical zone body that St. Juste, Michael Davis, Emmanuel Forbes have, to where you're that 6'1", 6'2", 33-inch arms, long, physical work downhill, Sauce Gardner type of body, those long, lanky, wiry type of defenders. That's not Ennis Rakestraw. But when you just look at the fundamental ability to play man and zone, again, I mentioned the eyes, I mentioned the physicality, that will translate, for me, to the NFL level. And predictively, this is the bucket to where I expect Washington to add a corner. Now, those day two bucket of corners are going to be interesting because they're not going to have a shot, as of right now, to get your Terrion Arnolds, Kool-Aid McKinstry's, Cooper DeJean, Quinyon Mitchell's expected to be the first corner off the board in the teens, if he lasts that long. But in that bucket there, it's Willie Kamari Lassiter from Georgia, it's Ennis Rakestraw, it's TJ Tampa from Iowa State, who is a very physical playmaking corner as well, but he's got some hip tightness that worries me a little bit as far as an immediate transition to the NFL level. And then you're going to get into those nickel-specific guys like Mike Sanristil from Michigan, Andrew Phillips from Kentucky, and Jerrion Jones as well from Florida State, and of course Max Melton from Rutgers. So those guys are nickel-specific, but that's your day two early bucket of corners that are probably going to come off the board there. So it limits you a little bit if you're Adam Peters as far as adding a perimeter guy. And if you're there at 40 and Ennis Rakestraw from Missouri is on the board, that's where I would go at 40th overall. And that's where predictively I think Washington will look to add a corner in this draft. Moving beyond there, Washington is now on the board at 78th overall. So around and a little bit more later. And I'm looking for Washington, and this is where I think they will add another defender in the safeties room. Cam Curl is no longer there. Now, I don't think they need to go here in the top 100 to add a safety. It's a safety class that's not super talented, doesn't have a Kyle Hamilton or a Derwin James or anything like that, but there is talent at the position. Tyler Newbin from Minnesota, I expect to be the first safety off the board. I expect him to be a top 45 pick in this class. But then as you get back into that second tier of safeties, where it's your Jaden Hickses from Washington State, it's Cam Kinchins from Miami, who unfortunately has not had a good pre-draft process and has fallen down a ton of league boards to where this guy was talked about in December as the number one safety and potential first-round pick. Don't be shocked if Cam Kinchins is still on the board when we get to day three, folks. So as we look at this draft in the safety class, for me at 78, I want a guy that can play low, that can play high, that can play special teams, and you know what you're going to get. And that is Cole Bishop from Utah. Love seeing him at the Senior Bowl, flying around making plays. I recently posted a clip on my Twitter of him and just ability to scrape and slide and play at a different speed than the players on that Utah defense in the Pac-12 and get after people, again, at multiple levels, at multiple alignments. That's what Cam Curl did for a long time, covering tight ends, covering running backs. If he had to cover a receiver, he would have to, but be a leader on the back end. And we know that Washington has talent in the safeties room, right? Percy Butler is there. Derek Forrest is going to be healthy. There are some guys there already that are going to make some plays. So again, at 78th overall here, a kid that I think will make an impact in multiple phases, that is Cole Bishop, safety from Utah. Now we get to the 100th overall selection. And this is where it gets fun for Washington because it could be a receiver. It could be another edge. It could be potentially a more traditional off-ball linebacker if they want to add another guy, maybe to work under Bobby Wagner, because I expect a guy like Frankie Louvu to live near the line of scrimmage even more, potentially as an edge. The guy's got 14 sacks in each of the last 2 years, and we've seen in the past what Dan Quinn has done with a guy like Micah Parsons. Now, I'm not comparing Frankie Louvu to Micah Parsons, but as far as that role to where they drafted an off-ball linebacker or signed an off-ball linebacker in Frankie Louvu's perspective, allowing him to play near the line of scrimmage and get after the quarterback, Bobby Wagner's talked about it this offseason himself as far as he can flat out get after the quarterback in a variety of ways, and I expect Frankie to do that. So now it leaves you with Bobby Wagner and Jamin Davis as really your primary linebackers. Are those two guys that you just want no matter what, right? Your two guys. And I think in this bucket is where Washington could go for a linebacker. But I think if they don't go receiver here as well, receiver is definitely a need. And you guys may be thinking, well, Ryan, we do need a wide receiver three. Guys, I agree with you. I fully agree with you. Wide receiver three is a need for this team. And if they don't want to go corner at 40, that could be a possibility as well for a Malachi Corley or a Ricky Pearsall, Roman Wilson, Ladd McConkey, if he lasts that long. Those types of bucket guys right there, that could be a potentially an add there. But I'm going offensive tackle again here with the 100th overall selection, where you drafted Tyler Guyton to where he could play right tackle again right away and replace Andrew Wiley. Or he could play left tackle. Fully expect him to play left tackle if he is drafted right there at 29 in the trade back in. But I'm going tackle again, and I'm drafting a guy that by no means compares to Tyler Guyton from an athleticism perspective, but from a technician perspective, a technicality. One of my favorite guys in that middle round bucket is Blake Fisher from Notre Dame. He lived in the shadow of Joe Alt this year. Joe Alt at left tackle, my offensive tackle one in this class, would not be surprised he comes off the board to the Los Angeles Chargers at fifth overall, even though there's a ton of buzz surrounding the Chargers and, of course, Malik Nabers from LSU. But Blake Fisher, I believe right away, could start instead of Andrew Wiley on the right side. Now, again, he's a little top-heavy for me. He's kind of built in that Darnell Wright type of build. I know last year you guys remember that name coming out of Tennessee, went to Chicago in the top 10, was a favorite of Washington in last year's class. However, when you look at Blake, right side, I love his ability in the run game to get vertical. Those wider type of bodies, we've seen it with Tyler Biadasz, we've seen it with Nick Allegretti. Those are the types of run blockers that Cliff Kingsbury wants along the front five, and those body types, those wider type of bodies. Blake Fisher, fits that mold. And if you want young talent, and if you want him to sit or potentially be that sixth offensive lineman, I think that goes overlooked for teams, we're here in the middle rounds where you're going to add productive players, that's fine, but also add depth. Blake Fisher's a guy that can play both tackle. He could slide into guard if he had to, because I like his ability as far as be able to sink his hips. Again, play with technical ability, win with leverage, establish your hands, get vertical in the run game. He will do that for a team. Again, not as athletic as a Tyler Guyton. That's hard to match for any tackle in this class. I don't care if you're Tyler Guyton, you're a Jordan Morgan, or you're a Joe Alt, and you're a Olu Fashanu at the top of the board, Talese Fuaga. It doesn't matter. Not going to match up with Tyler Guyton from an athleticism perspective in his lower half. But as far as a guy that can slide in right away at right tackle and be someone to rely on from day one, this is a route that I could see Washington going. Now, from a 10,000-foot view, do you want to start two rookies on either side of the line? You really don't. And again, I wouldn't draft Blake Fisher here to start immediately from day one, but I would allow him to compete with Andrew Wiley. Like, this is not high school football where the senior's starting over the freshman. This is the NFL. And for Washington's perspective, to where Andrew Wiley is from the prior regime, everybody is, except for these new free agent additions and this draft class, anything's on the table. That's not just for guys like Andrew Wiley. That's for Terry McLaurin. That's for Jahan Dotson. That's for Derek Forrest, Jamin Davis. That's for Daron Payne, John Allen. That's for everybody. This is a new regime with an entirely new slate. And if you don't think those guys are saying, look, this is a new regime, I have no ties to them, they didn't draft me, they had no part in drafting me, it matters for every single player, guys. So when I look at Washington right now, they got to get players and they got to add competition at every single spot. Whether it's at receiver, and you know right now your top two guys are Terry and Jahan, or it's at running back, to where, absolutely, you got a heck of a two in Brian Robinson, Austin Eckler, and you drafted Chris Rodriguez. But this regime did not draft Chris Rodriguez. So everything comes into context as far as how this regime, led by Adam Peters, is going to draft and add talent at certain positions. Because flat out, Adam Peters could say, I don't like Chris Rodriguez. I don't like his game. I don't like his style of play as a runner in our offense of what we want to do. Now, in reality, Chris Rodriguez's skill set does align. But I'm just playing hypotheticals for you guys as far as how things could align for Adam Peters with these certain positions. So again, with the 100th overall selection, Blake Fisher from Notre Dame, allow him to compete right away with Andrew Wiley on the right side, and also potentially be that sixth offensive lineman to play tackle and play guard in a pinch. So now we move back to 139. Washington's back on the board here, and this is where I believe that they will go receiver. the receiver class for this year is, you could call it historic. Offensive line, the offensive tackle, I think is excellent. The interior O-line is one of the best in the last 4 or 5 years. Offensive talent, it's a good year to need offensive talent. With Washington, need a quarterback, they need tackles, they need a tight end, they need another receiver. It's a good year for Adam Peters and company to have this amount of picks and for these classes at these positions to be so damn talented. So at the 139th overall selection, I am taking one of the premier route runners and separators in this class that has buzz, but not enough. And that is Javon Baker from UCF. Former transfer from Alabama, turned on the Golden Knights this year down there under Gus Malzahn. And Javon Baker is a special type of separator. He's got a confidence and a swagger to his game. I know a lot of you out there would like, if you watched any Golden Knights games over these last few years, you saw who Javon Baker was, what he offers for an offense. He's a fundamentally much more talented football player than what De'Ami Brown was coming out of North Carolina, and really what De'Ami Brown is right now, years into his career in Washington, to where it's never developed. And I'm tired of trying to kick the tires on trying to get more out of De'Ami Brown. So adding a receiver right here at 139 that understands how to separate, that's a playmaker vertically if you want to take those shots. And if you draft a guy like Jaden Daniels, you are going to take vertical shots. Now, I know that excites a lot of you out there. The biggest thing for me in Jaden Daniels' game is winning in the shallow to intermediate areas and winning inside a structure as a quarterback where young guys are going to have to win early on in their career. That's my major concern with Jaden Daniels, but I'm hoping he improves quickly if he indeed is the pick for Washington. But you add a talent on the perimeter behind Jahan and Terry that understands the nuances of the position, I would love to see them add a guy like Javon Baker here at 139. Now we move back. I'm going to add another corner. They got to get more fundamental talent in that room. I'm adding Jarvis Brownlee Jr., one of the risers in this pre-draft process, was excellent down the Senior Bowl. Kid out of Louisville that his teammate in Quincy Riley was initially expected to go to the Senior Bowl. Quincy denied his invitation, went back to school. Things I heard out of Louisville, and I believe I've told you guys this before on prior episodes, is that Quincy's expecting to be dominant in the ACC this year and become a potential first-rounder next year. So that's a name to know for 2025, but his teammate in Jarvis Brownlee, Jim Nagy and the Senior Bowl staff, looked at the Louisville roster and said, let's get Jarvis down here. This kid can play a little bit. Let's give him an opportunity. And he showcased himself extremely well in team drills, in one-on-ones. Jarvis is a riser in this class. Now, do I expect him to be here at 152? I don't. Could he? Absolutely. Anything is possible when we get to Detroit here in these next few days and what will happen rounds 1 through 7. But I do expect him to be off the board potentially in that 110 to 120 range in this draft, later portions of the third round, early portions of the fourth. But if he's there at 152, you need some inside-out versatility and a guy that won't shy away and setting his hair on fire and getting down the field as a gunner on special teams. Jarvis Brownlee Jr., you can never have enough corners, from Louisville, is my pick there at 152. And then my final selection, guys, this is where I think Washington could add a guy earlier, or they could add a guy right here, or maybe they bring in a guy as a UDFA. We will see. And also, of course, not just I traded up earlier to get Tyler Guyton, you can also trade back as well and add more capital, not just for 2024, but for 2025, 2026, and beyond. It's crazy to even think that we're already in those years for the draft, 2025 next year. It's crazy to even think that. But right here, the tight ends room for Washington. I've talked about it at nausea for a lot of you guys. I know I've hated on Cole Turner, John Bates, but I've hated on Cole Turner for a long time. I just pleaded to you guys to understand the context with Cole Turner before he even stepped foot in a burgundy gold jersey, as far as please do not rely on Cole Turner to be a tight end one for an NFL offense. It never was going to happen, and it never will happen. I know you guys got excited in training camp making a couple catches over the middle of the field. Guys, I can't say anything more. Everything requires context when you watch the game of Cole Turner. However, this is a kid that's rising in the process. I don't think he will be on the board at 222. It's more so a name for you guys to get familiar with. And that's Tanner McLaughlin from Arizona. Arizona was sneakily one of the better teams in the Pac-12 this year. They have a receiver coming out next year in Tatora McMillan that's going to be most likely a first-round pick. Noah Fifita, their quarterback, was really good this year. Michael Wiley, their running back, is going to be drafted probably later on, 6th, 7th round. Really like his game. Of course, Jacob Cowing It was their receiver transferred in from UTEP. He's going to be somebody to know in the middle rounds, a third round specifically, is where that bucket, I think, he will come off the board. And of course, Jordan Morgan was along that offensive line at tackle, a name to know in the tackle class for Washington, potentially later portions of the first round if they trade back in, or if they stayed pat and stayed there in the middle of the 30s in the early portions of the second round. But Tanner McLaughlin was that guy that was really overlooked in this Arizona offense. And when I turned on his tape, I gave him a fourth round grade. I think he's underrated in this class. I think his ability to stretch the seam is fantastic. Just last year, we sat here and we talked about Sam Laporta and the Iowa offense to where he did not get fed the ball, and projecting him to an NFL offense that would feed him the ball, his skill set would thrive. If you guys followed the Detroit Lions at all this year, you guys know exactly what Sam Laporta was able to do for that Lions offense to where there's not a lot of Detroit fans that still remember what TJ Hockenson was in Detroit because of the season, rookie season, that Laporta had as a day two pick out of Iowa. So with Tanner McLaughlin, I'm not saying he's going to be tight end one for this offense. Do I think he has the skill set as a blocker in line and then also flexed out in space to potentially be a guy that's featured in an offense? I do. I absolutely do. But having Zach Ertz there as a veteran, friendly face, understands the offense, understands leverage in the run game, he's going to be the tight end one right away. But if Armani Rodgers doesn't have the explosiveness and burst that he once did before the Achilles injury, and John Bates, look, if the regime doesn't like him just specifically as a throwback Y, as a further extension along the line of scrimmage, and there's no snaps there for a guy like Cole Turner, Tanner McLaughlin could absolutely challenge, and he would challenge immediately for me, to be tight end two in this Commanders offense. So if you guys have 5-10 minutes here over these next few days as we get closer to Detroit, take a peek at Tanner McLaughlin's game from Arizona. Really exciting player, an intriguing player, hell of a young man I've had a privilege of getting to know in this process. He's going to come in right away, lunch pail type of attitude, do anything possible to get on the field. And then when you see him strap up and the skill set that he has, where you need tight ends to be able to expand a playbook, stretch the seam, block, seal that five tech on the edge, do a lot of different things for you. Tanner McLaughlin can do that, and he's an underrated tight end in this class publicly, but for teams, he's someone that's rising on boards, and I would not be shocked. He's gone by the end of the fourth round. So, guys, that's going to do it for today's episode, my final episode of the 2024 draft cycle. I hope you guys enjoyed lots of these prospect interviews coming out. I know the interview was just posted here in these last few minutes as I was looking at my phone here that my interview with Ennis Rakestraw just came out. So you guys can dive into who Ennis is as a young man, an impressive young man, if he were to go to Washington. Hope you guys have enjoyed all the prospect interviews. Just always appreciate you guys tuning in. I know the draft season, it's dragging on a little bit. The prospect fatigue for some guys is wearing on you guys. I'm just ready for all of these players to find homes, to get strapped up again, and just do what they've done since they were little kids, and that's just play football. Because a month from now, we're just going to be talking about mini camps, we're going to be talking about training camp and where these guys fit in for each team, not just in Washington. So it's been a fun process, long process, exhaustive process, but it's the best time of the year. I know you guys are excited, as am I. And again, I will be in Detroit all 3 days here this week, excited to bring you guys coverage both for Bleacher Report and the Draft Network. Make sure you guys are following me. If you don't follow me there already, on X at _RyanFowler. So thanks again throughout this whole entire process, tuning in with me, guys. A lot more of this stuff to come. We'll have a full draft recap once I get back on Monday morning from Detroit. Excited to dive in to the Washington Commanders 2024 and Adam Peters' first draft class as a Washington Commander. So appreciate you guys as always. We'll talk to you soon. This podcast is on all podcast platforms. Enjoy the draft. Enjoy all 3 days. Remember to keep contact with everything. Coaching and development remains super important for these guys. Again, you want my immediate thoughts? I'm on X at _RyanFowler if you don't follow me there already. So we'll talk to you soon. Appreciate you guys. I'm Ryan Fowler, and this is Commanding the Huddle.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.